The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from probably primarily the AARP Bulletin, maybe a little bit from Money Magazine. We'll see how it goes. And the programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were reading the cover story from the December AARP Bulletin on Boost Your Brain Power, how to keep your brain going as well as possible, as long as possible. And there was it was a lengthy article with four steps all broken down into good advice. And we got through two of them and most of the third and ran out of time, but it was a good enough article, so I'd sort of like to pick it up again. The first of the four main steps was guard your memory. The second was avoid Alzheimer's. The third was keep your focus. And that's where we stopped. We read some of that. And then we got to here, where it talked about the fact that we have, as we age, slower processing and fewer filters. The processing speed of our brains starts to decline at an early age, around 24, according to a study at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia. And with processing decline comes a diminishing ability to switch from one task to another or manage interruptions. Older adults also struggle to filter out irrelevant information, Gazelle says, which is why conversations are often challenging in a busy restaurant. But while distractions may be difficult on the brain, focused activity, whether it's working, gardening, volunteering, or going to the gym, can have the opposite effect. In a study by researchers at the University of Texas and the University of Alabama, older adults who stayed busy outperformed their less occupied counterparts on cognitive tests. Despite his job as a computer science professor at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., Cal Newport lives a mostly analog life. He reads print newspapers. He turns off his computer at 5 p.m. and doesn't have social media accounts. By blocking digital distractions, Newport has found time to write four books, earn his Ph.D., write numerous peer-reviewed academic papers, and spend summer evenings listening to baseball games on the radio. A life defined by fragmented attention, he says, can produce exhaustion and anxiety. A distracted future. That ability to perform deep work, focusing without distraction on a cognitively demanding task, will become an important job skill, Newport says. People also seem happier when performing deep work, he says, writing an important report or creating something with depth, as opposed to a task like answering emails. In my experience, people in their 50s and 60s often regain a deep work ability faster than younger people, he says. The big difference is that if you're older, you spent most of your life without the level of intense and constant distraction, something most young people have never experienced. But in the coming years, the demands on our attention span will likely grow as technology enters more of our lives, from virtual reality to smart appliances. I think the more you primarily consume tiny bits of information, the harder it gets to consume larger pieces of information, says Wu, who attributes the problem to attention-hungry advertising models. No one is making money when you're playing with your grandchildren. The attention merchants want you clicking on pics of your grandkids, not spending time with your grandkids, because then they can advertise to it. Avoiding this distracted future and saving your brain ultimately starts with you. It's important to examine your life and ask, is this really what I want to do with my mind and with my time? Will it all just get frittered away? Wu says, if you want to take control of your life and your mind, this is where it starts. step four in boosting your brain power is cleanse your brain. A newly discovered toxic removal system might be the key to preventing disease. Your brain is your busiest organ, consuming as much as 25% of your overall energy. And as is the case with anything that converts fuel into energy, it produces waste. No matter how pure your thoughts, you've probably developed a pretty dirty mind by the end of each day. So how does your brain, locked away from the body's sanitation lymphatic system, get rid of all that waste? The answer, as scientists only recently discovered, is a complex process that may also help us better understand and potentially prevent degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. The more waste lying around in the brain, it appears, the greater the chances for those diseases to take root. The intricacies of that cleansing process, called the glymphatic system, are still emerging. Just this past May, for example, a group of researchers published their discovery of a new type of brain scavenger cell in zebrafish, which share many of the same cell types as humans. The research is ongoing, but we know that some scavenger cells are important for brain health and seem to become impaired with age, says Jeffrey Iliff of Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, who is part of the team pioneering this research. Iliff's research focuses on why the brain's cleaning systems diminish with age and ultimately on how to prevent that decline. He and other neuroscientists say there are steps you can take that may help maintain a clean brain bill of health. Start with some of the advice you've already read. Studies have indicated that maintaining your blood pressure, getting regular exercise, and eating a diet rich in vegetables, healthy fats, and antioxidants all should show positive impact on brain cleaning. But perhaps the most important piece of advice is to prioritize sleep. Like most cleaning crews, your glymphatic system sweeps waste after hours when the activity of the day is done. Your glial cells, which surround and support brain neurons, control the glymphatic flow by shrinking when you sleep, explains Brian R. Christie, a neuroscience professor at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. The space between your cells increases by up to 60%. This expansion allows more fluid to be pumped through and drives the clearance of waste from the brain, he says. Older adults often struggle to get enough sleep, says neurologist and sleep specialist W. Christopher Winter, M.D., author of The Sleep Solution. Keeping a sleep schedule is important, especially as you get older. He notes that irregular sleep hours and long naps during the day can wreak havoc on healthy sleep cycles. If you're comfortable on your side, curl up that way when you hit the hay. Animal studies have shown that your brain does a better job of cleaning house in the fetal sleep position than on your back or stomach. The left side appears to be even better for maximizing circulation through your body because most of your venous return travels up the right side, and those veins can compress when you lie on them, Winter says. But don't lose sleep over it if you're not a left side or side sleeper, if you're getting good sleep. Now, they've got a couple of useful sidebars for us here. One, going back to step three, which was keep your focus. Here is a list of six ways to regain your focus. 1. Grab a good novel. In a study at Emory University in Atlanta, subjects read at night and underwent fMRI scans of their brain each morning. The scans showed increased connectivity in the part of the brain associated with language. Most interesting to researchers, the neural changes persisted for 5 days after participants finished the book. 2. Play an instrument or meditate. Or write without interruption for 30 minutes. Focusing on a single complex task improves your ability to focus on other tasks, says Harvard professor Joe DeGutis. Making a habit of these activities can result in attentional state training, where you are better able to get in a relaxed, focused state for other activities. 3. Work in the morning. In a study by the Rotman Research Institute, participants aged 60 to 82 performed better on cognitive tasks and were more focused when tested in the morning than in the afternoon. 4. learn a language. Research at the University of Birmingham in England found that bilingual speakers were better at maintaining focus and attention than monolinguals. Muy bien. 5. Chew gum. In a test involving the recall of random numbers, those who were chewing gum responded more quickly and accurately than those who were not, a study at Cardiff University in Wales found. 6. Volunteer. When older adults volunteered in the Baltimore Experience Corps, a program in which retirees serve as mentors for children, it not only stopped age-related shrinking of the brain, but some brains grew slightly in size, according to research from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore. Now, here's another sidebar. A breakdown of the cleanup. This refers to cleaning your brain. Special nervous system cells sweep in to scavenge additional waste. No, sorry, I've started in the wrong place. 1. Brain cells perform autophagy, self-eating, mopping up diseased and damaged bits of protein and metabolic waste. Next, special nervous system cells sweep in to scavenge additional waste. Next, the glymphatic system flushes out dirty fluid and molecules from inside the brain tissue through a network of pathways. Clean cerebrospinal fluid replaces it. And then finally, lymphatic vessels surrounding the brain deliver the waste to the lymphatic system, which rids the body of toxins, waste, and other unwanted material. How AARP is fighting for your brain. AARP provides these resources to help older Americans maintain brain health. Global Council on Brain Health. This independent group of about 50 scientists, health professionals, scholars, and policy experts works to provide advice about maintaining and improving brain health. A core group of about a dozen experts coordinates research and policy reviews in areas such as sleep, social engagement, and fitness, and the council issues reports and meets about 3 times annually. The council was created by AARP in collaboration with the British charity Age UK. For more information, go to globalcouncilonbrainhealth.org. Staying Sharp. This website, stayingsharp.org, provides science-based tools to assess, maintain, and improve your brain health. It features information and activities designed to be fun and effective, grounded in reliable evidence. Brain Health and Wellness Channel. A section of the AARP.org website, it features the latest news and research on brain health and conditions. Now, following that, here's an article headlined, Bright New Remedies. Researchers are exploring how light therapy can be used to treat ailments from depression to Alzheimer's. For an increasing number of health conditions, the right medicine might be simply a dose of bright light. Here's a sampling of the promising and often surprising research underway. Depression. Light therapy is most associated with seasonal affective disorder, SAD, a form of depression that hits some people during darker winter days. But what's exciting is the growing number of studies pointing toward this therapy's effectiveness in treating non-seasonal depression. In a 2015 study at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, subjects with depression were given Prozac, a placebo, light therapy, or Prozac and light therapy for 8 weeks. The people who used light therapy or Prozac improved more than the placebo group, but those who've combined light therapy with Prozac saw the most improvement. As with SAD treatments, the light works by stimulating the retina, says Norman E. Rosenthal, clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University Medical School in Washington, D.C. The retina signals the brain's hypothalamus, which then funnels the info in many directions, one of which is involved in boosting serotonin. To treat SAD, people use a specially designed light, a good one costs around $150, of at least 10,000 lux, the equivalent of being outside on a clear spring day. It's placed about 2 feet from the face, usually from 10 to 30 minutes in the morning. Experts advise people with non-seasonal depression to consult their doctor before trying self-treatment with an SAD light, which can exacerbate some eye conditions. Alzheimer's disease. In a small clinical trial, researchers applied LED lights to Alzheimer's patients with two devices, one worn like a headset and another that clips to the nose, for 20 to 25 minutes twice a week. Over 12 weeks, the subjects reported a dramatic improvement in their cognitive abilities, says one of the study's co-authors, Michael Hamblin, principal investigator at the Wellman Center for Photomedicine at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. Then they removed the device and they all got worse, Hamblin says. But when they were given their own device to use at home, they all improved for a second time. The treatment seems to work because a small amount of the light is able to reach the brain, which is extremely sensitive to light. Scientists say the light stimulates new cell growth and connections between neurons. Known as photobiomodulation, this approach is still in its early testing stages, though more patients are now receiving the same therapy used in Hamblin's study. A $499 product called ViLight. Scientists, that's spelled V-I-E-L-I-G-H-T. Scientists are also excited for its potential to treat Parkinson's disease, traumatic brain injury, and more ailments. Sleep disorders. The idea of dawn simulation has been around for a while, but it has just now become a mainstream way to improve sleep patterns. The simulators are specially designed bedside LED lights, costing $20 and up, that turn on 20 or 30 minutes before you wake up and slowly grow brighter before the alarm sounds. Some can add soothing sounds such as gentle rainfall. They are recommended for people with sleep issues to help reestablish healthy sleep cycles. Users often say they feel more energy upon waking. Skin cancer. Photodynamic therapy, PDT, is the combination of light with special drugs called photosensitizing agents. This effective treatment often eliminates the need for surgery. The agent is applied to the cancerous region or to a sun-damaged area that is precancerous on the skin or through a vein. Once the cells absorb the agent, light is applied, causing the drug to react with oxygen. This forms a chemical that kills the cells. It will kill anything, Hamblin says. It's like the strongest beam of X-rays that you can imagine. Because it finds cells that are rapidly dividing, PDT may catch cancer that surgery doesn't, says Jamie Lynn Miller, a dermatologist at Vanderbilt Health in Nashville, Tennessee. PDT is used to treat certain infections, too. Now, here's an interesting article. This is a Q&A session with Sylvester Turner, who is Houston's 63-year-old mayor. And Mayor Turner was tested by Hurricane Harvey, but rising from segregated poverty prepared him to deal with adversity in leading America's fourth largest city. There's no reason for seniors to be stranded. So here we go. You just led Houston through a historic disaster. How did you approach decision-making during the crisis? Think it through, be decisive, be clear, be collaborative in your approach. Get the information in real time as much as possible and move forward. I think if you do that, then you're fine. The worst thing is to spend a lot of time pondering what to do. If you're indecisive and people don't know which direction to go, then everybody's just standing around and nobody's doing anything and nothing gets accomplished. That's the worst situation. After Hurricane Harvey, you were both praised and criticized for not ordering the evacuation of Houston. How did you reach that decision? I was in the legislature in 2005 when Hurricane Rita hit. More than 100 people lost their lives trying to evacuate. There's a time and a place to evacuate, but if you're going to do it, you've got to make that decision early enough so you can make sure that the gas stations are all full. If you haven't handled all of the logistics, then people are on the road stranded. There comes this major rainfall and people are stuck. That would have been catastrophic. There was no question in my mind to evacuate would have been a bad decision. Nursing homes came under great pressure during the recent hurricanes. Do we need to rethink crisis management at these facilities? Yes, especially when it comes to our seniors. We need to make sure that their living accommodations take into account flooding events, either make the places where they are much more resilient or make sure we have evacuation plans for them. If something happens, if flood events come, we need to automatically know what steps should be taken and where they're going ahead of time, like a fire drill. There's no reason for seniors to be stranded in nursing homes or any sort of care facility when events of this kind happen. For seniors who are living at home, we need to take into account whether we need to open up centers for them. Set up some special places where they can go, especially if they're staying by themselves, just until the storm passes. Your father died when you were 13 years old. You choked up and nearly cried as you were being sworn into office as mayor of Houston almost 50 years later. What were you thinking about at that moment? I reflected back when my dad was alive. He'd put his boys in the back of a pickup truck, go across town and cut people's yards. I remembered that. I had gone through 3 mayoral races, losing in the first 2. My mom passed just before I was getting ready to start the 3rd campaign. Just reflecting back on the journey brought back a lot of memories. You are from a low-income neighborhood called Acres Homes. Now that you can afford to live anywhere in Houston, you choose to stay in your old neighborhood. Why? Well, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood with 1 elementary and junior high. The principal lived in the same neighborhood. Most of the teachers lived in the same neighborhood. The business people lived there. Those are the people that I looked up to. They were an inspiration to me. The baton has been handed to me, so I need to be an inspiration, a motivating influence for the young boys and girls who are coming through. When you were young, you were bused to go to another school. At that time, the idea of an African-American growing up to be the mayor was out of the realm of possibility. Tell us about the changes that you've witnessed. We integrated the school district. At the very beginning, there were fights every day. The white kids were meeting us for the first time. We were meeting them for the first time. Quite frankly, when I look back on it, the kids would have been okay if not for the parents. Once the parents got out of the kids' ears, we acclimated well to one another. When I got to high school, I was elected president of the student body. You can see in that short period of time the transformation. Were you always interested in politics? What motivated me to enter the legislature was remembering catching the bus with my mom and with my brother. She was taking him to the hospital because he had some behavioral issues. We didn't have any private health insurance, so the doctor gave my brother some medication and said, if he becomes a danger to himself or the family, bring him back. But for right now, there's not much more we can do. We don't have any beds for him. It's at that moment when I said, it's hell to be poor. When I discovered that the legislature had something to do with mental and behavioral health issues, that was really the driving force for me to run for the legislature. You ran for mayor twice before and lost, and the campaigns turned rough. Others would have given up. What kept you motivated? This is Texas. Politics in Texas is a physical sport. I didn't come from a family of quitters. Life has always been challenging, but you deal with it. You just find a place where you can make the biggest difference. Houston is such a huge city. Are there things you're focusing on that will make it a more livable place for older people? The focus for me is building complete communities. Seniors, for example, need housing. That's important. Placing that housing close to bus or transit lines so that they're close to grocery stores so they can get to their doctor or pharmacy, that's important. Seniors certainly want to be in communities where they feel safe, where they can walk, where they can establish that family atmosphere. We need to create those environments all over the city. We owe it to them. We are all standing on their shoulders, and now we have to make sure that in their older days they have the quality of life that they have earned and richly deserve. During Hurricane Harvey and its aftermath, you had a lot of sleepless nights. How do you keep your energy up in a situation like this? Do you drink a lot of coffee? The last time I had a cup of coffee, I was 6 years old. And what a cup! I asked my dad, and he said no several times, but I kept asking. So he gave me a cup, just black. I took a swallow and spit that stuff out. I was done. I haven't had a cup of coffee since I was 6. It appears staying enthusiastic about your job is not a problem. I said, once I got here, the goal was to do as much as I could in the time period I was given, and to savor every moment. The truth is, I love this job. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. I'm going to read now some AARP state news. First of all, North Carolina. Caring for you. State legislators will be back in session in May, and AARP North Carolina is gearing up to advocate for the state's 1.3 million unpaid family caregivers who save the state money on long-term care costs. Topping the legislative agenda is the Caregiver Advise, Record, Enable Care Act, which would allow every hospital patient to designate a family caregiver and would require hospitals to make reasonable efforts to show caregivers how to perform medical tasks their loved ones will need at home. Most North Carolina caregivers 45 and older have helped with nursing or medical tasks at home, a 2015 AARP survey found. The state office also wants to expand the state's 211 phone service, which provides free confidential help to those seeking health and human services. To get involved, call Charmaine Fuller Cooper, AARP Associate State Director for Advocacy, at 919-508-0266. That's 919-508-0266. Next, Virginia. Use your head. AARP is hosting brain health seminars throughout Northern Virginia to explain how smart habits and social interaction can sharpen your mind. The community meetings will focus on 5 pillars of brain health: diet, regular exercise, social engagement, relaxation, and learning new things. Uh-oh, it looks like those meeting dates are past us already. For street addresses or to find similar events in other communities, go to states.aarp.org/brainhealth. Okay, I'm going to close with a quick poem by yours truly. In fact, this is called Pelicans. You'll always see them flying in odd numbers, he told us. This and many other things. Nobody's mind was ever more made up than his. Our father, who like the sun, wrapped around us, stung the backs of our legs, and warmed the sand under our bellies. Like him, we loved their stately flight, gliding high overhead, or in long strings that rose and fell like breath above the swell, their wings slow rowing down the beach. 60 years and more, I count them every time. Here, 7 and 11 come together. There, a single bird joins 5 in flight. Eyes strained and skipping in the glare, I struggle still to make him come out right. Now, hope you'll join us next week. I'm Florence Nash, reading for Triangle Radio Reading Service, and today's programming is generously underwritten by Saliba Chiropractic, who welcome the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. So long until next time. The content of this program is for people who are blind and print impaired.